And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. It's me and Ari Wasserman on a Monday, and we thought we were done ranking coaching jobs, but we realized we were leaving out a significant swath of college football fandom. We've gotten several requests for this, so I think this will be a fun exercise. The more I dug into it, the more interesting it got. Top 10 group of five jobs. We've already done all the Power Five leagues and ranked them top to bottom. With group of five, when you get toward the bottom, it's all very similar. So we're just going to do the top 10 group of five jobs, which is not just the same two leagues you probably think it's going to be, at least for me. Ari, I don't know about you. Ari, how do we want to do this? Do we want to go 1 through 10 or 10 through 1 to make it more exciting?
I think that our top fives are probably going to be very similar. I'm very curious to see if our bottom five of the top 10 are the same. So I think going from top to bottom might be more advantageous for us because the disagreement is the best part. We'll delay the disagreement so that people are forced to listen to this longer. And then, of course, we'll bleed into the random ranking, I think is the right way to go about this.
I have a sneaking suspicion we're going to disagree fairly early. So let's hit us with your number one, Ari.
Okay, my number one is Houston. And I think that when I was first trying to compile the list, the obvious landing point, I think, would be UCF, which I'm assuming is going to be in your top five somewhere because of the success that it's had and the location it is in the country. But maybe Houston belongs on that same level where there are certain top tier group of five jobs that have recycled coaches and have changed personnel, but have always continued to be atop that category. And, you know, I was actually talking to my buddy Bill Landis about this, but he is wary sometimes, specifically in talking about Tom Herman, about hiring coaches from certain group of five programs because the advantageous situations that they have at those programs don't translate to their power five jobs. And Houston was one of them. It's like, because we were talking about how Tom Herman was a can't miss hire at the time and it was perfect. He was killing it at Houston. He had two great seasons. And then you go to Texas, a place that he has a background, and then things don't go the way that they're supposed to. And it's like, is it because Tom Herman all of a sudden forgot how to coach, or is it because his number one bullet point, which is winning at Houston, was based on the program's built-in advantages? So to me, I think that's a pretty compelling argument for number one, especially considering the fact, too, that the geography of it, having a whole city to yourself. Now, obviously, LSU.
Don't have a city to yourself. I mean, Texas A&M is 90 minutes away, and it's in the SEC.
But what I mean is that when you're a group of five program, you're not going to be going out and beating Texas A&M and LSU for the types of players that those programs are looking for.
Ed Oliver is the one we remember because he's the exception to the rule.
Exactly. But other than that, you have the first pick of the litter for group of five talents. And in a city like that, there is a ton of talent that is going to play in the group of five where you might be able to get the top tier players that make your group of five program stronger, which is why Houston is usually more talented than their opponents. So to me, I think that it is the best job in the country, especially considering the fact they just built a brand new stadium on campus in 2015. Their facilities are Power Five quality. The Houston area is stacked with talent. And, you know, it seems to me that no matter who the coach is, you'll be able to find some pretty easy success in terms of what we always talk about, which is identifying a plan, executing that plan, and proving that that plan works. And I think Houston has that built in already.
So my number one is not Houston, but my criteria are apparently exactly the same as yours. You've just ignored the fact that there are two group of five programs, both in places with good players. Both of them have had success with multiple different coaches that have actually been more successful than Houston.
So who's your number one?
UCF.
Right. Well, they're my number two. It was kind of a coin flip with these two because it just like.
But Houston was not in the running for my number two. My one and two were very distinct.
Okay.
The argument between the two of them. And so UCF, same thing you said. Proximity to players, location. They just like Houston, they spend bigger than they are. You know, they may be a group of five program. They spend closer to a power five program. So that's one of those things that matters, especially if you're a coach looking for the job. One, because they're going to pay you more, but also because they're going to pay for facilities. They're going to pay for all the things that you may need. So that's where UCF is great. And then you've got George O'Leary took them to a BCS bowl. Scott Frost led them to an undefeated season. Josh Heupel took them to a New Year's Six Bowl. It says three different coaches that have all had great success there. You know, O'Leary had a number one draft pick or a first round draft pick at quarterback in Blake Bortles. They're just, it seems like it's set up for that. And it's been more successful than Houston, which is why I put it above Houston. Houston probably has the highest ceiling of all these, although I would say UCF's ceiling is pretty close.
Well, they didn't win a national championship, but I will tell you why I put UCF second, and then you can tell me if I'm nuts, okay?
Okay.
I put UCF second because Florida is the natural second base, recruiting base for like 100% of the teams in America.
And so is Texas.
No, so is Texas. I agree, but UCF in Orlando isn't necessarily as closely situated to one of the major metropolitan areas that most of that talent comes from. And I feel like Ohio State and everybody in the Big Ten
Orlando is a major metropolitan area, is 90 minutes from Tampa, is 2.5 hours from the, you know, center of Palm Beach, Broward.
No, but Houston has more talent on an annual basis than Orlando.
Houston has more talent on an annual basis than any other city in America, probably, other than Miami. So,
You know, and I feel like everybody else is in Florida, and Houston can build an entire roster based on the talent that's in their city that they're located, that's on their helmet. Whereas UCF has to recruit other parts of Florida, whether it be Tampa or Miami or all the places in between, and every other group of five and every other Big Ten and SEC school is in that state already. I feel like Houston.
But everybody's in Houston too.
No, I know, but it's different when Houston's on your helmet. I mean, that's like my feeling. It's like when you are a program that has a stadium that looks like that, that has the facilities that they are and has success the way that I just feel like it'd be easier for Houston to recruit Houston talent than UCF to recruit Tampa talent.
No, I disagree. Now, if USF gets its facility built, suddenly UCF, their situation becomes tougher. But I mean, UCF had better facilities than Florida and Florida State until only a few years ago. So you just got to remember they are ahead of the curve on this stuff. They're going to have a lazy river. Houston has no place for a lazy river. And Houston, now the neighborhood around Houston has gotten much better. They don't bring recruits in at night like they used to because they didn't want them to see the surrounding area. Things are that neighborhood is definitely because of the University of Houston, because it's growing and because of the Turkey Leg Hut. Let's be honest. Have you been to the Turkey Leg Hut?
Yeah.
It's just life-changing. Get the Alfredo and shrimp stuffed turkey leg with dirty rice. It's like
its own place in its own country, and that's it. I mean, I don't know
the husband-wife team that opened the Turkey Leg Hut. She is a former Houston basketball player. Houston has the highest ceiling. I agree because of there's so much talent nearby. But Houston and UCF for the same reasons are magnets for bounce backs. They're magnets for Power Five bounce backs who are transferring back for playing time or to be closer to home. And I think that helps too. But like I said, the only reason I didn't have Houston one or two, so we know your two is UCF. My number two is Cincinnati because this is the Bill Landis theory again, by the way. Everybody's coach there is good. Now, it may be that just they're good at picking them. Think about this. Mark D'Antonio, Brian Kelly, Butch Jones, and you can say what you want about Butch Jones at Tennessee, you want at Cincinnati. The only coach
And then Luke Fickell now. The only coach in of recent vintage who has not succeeded there is Tuberville. And he wasn't working that hard. Anybody who goes to Cincinnati and works wins. So that's the thing. Like when Fickell goes to another job, whenever that is, maybe he won't. I don't know. He's a different cat. But the next person who goes to Cincinnati will probably win too.
Yeah, Cincinnati's my three. So I just don't want you to think I'm nuts for Houston.
Well, now it's interesting because we're leaving out the one that I think a lot of people would think would be our number one. And I struggled with Houston in this one at number three and four because of the success of this one. So I've got Houston at three because of the ceiling I talked about, because of all those other things. Number four for me, and I imagine it's number four for you, maybe it isn't, Boise State.
It's not my number four.
Okay. So you're, and this is what I kept thinking through. My thing on Boise State is part of the reason we say UCF and Cincinnati and Houston, multiple coaches have succeeded there. That is evidence of an administration that wants to win at football. That's, you know, giving coaches what they need. Boise State definitely does that. And you can say location's tough, not a lot of players nearby, but, and maybe it is. Maybe it's just because Dan Hawkins was really, or well, let's go back. Houston Nutt was really good. Dan Hawkins was really good there. Chris Peterson was really good there. And Brian Harsin was really good there. But there may be something else to that, that they care deeply about football, and whoever's going to be there is going to be able to make it work. We'll see with Andy Avalos.
Yeah, my number four is SMU. And I don't know if that's nuts, but
It's not. I mean, tons of money. The NIL thing with SMU, I know I always bring them up, but they were kind of the biggest one, or they suffered the biggest drop off because of the death penalty. But they seem like the type of place where people would pitch in to make things work and maybe make a good player or two come.
Yeah, I've always, throughout all the rankings, I always use geography as my North Star. And SMU, and now that I live in Dallas for the last 7 months, I've actually gotten a front row seat of just kind of how passionate the city of Dallas is for SMU. Like, I never really realized that, but I wrote a story about it and it did really, really well. A lot of the people that I've met are very loyal SMU fans. The stadium gets loud. The money is off the charts. It's a beautiful campus. They play a fun style of football. Then they can create their entire roster from area talent. And Cincinnati, to a certain extent, is probably got worse geography than SMU. But they've been able to hire coaches who understand Ohio talent with backgrounds at Ohio State more often than not, who use the relationships as being Ohio State assistants to, you know, go through the state and find those overlooked gems that Ohio State doesn't have room for to make Cincinnati a great place. And the reason why Cincinnati has been successful over the span of multiple coaches, I think, is because they've identified what their head coach has to have in order to be successful there. And then those coaches go on to be successful, and then they're better suited for Power 5 jobs in the future. And it's all the same plan. And I think Cincinnati is inherently that. SMU has had its ups and downs, obviously. But you have a person in Sonny Dykes who you know, has familiarity with Texas more so than any other place that he's ever coached. The reason why it didn't go as well as he hoped it would have gone at Cal is because he couldn't create the relationships or manifest recruiting results in the Bay Area. And all sorts of different things that, you know, he was facing up there in Northern California that he's not at in Texas. So if they can actually get SMU back on track, he's going to have to do it by convincing local coaches to send their talent there. And he just signed a top 100 quarterback in the Dallas area to come lead that program. And the other thing, too, that he's done very well is, you know, conquered the transfer market. Dallas kids who go off to LSU or go off to Oklahoma or go off to A&M and do different big time places that want to play earlier in the transfer market, in turn, come back to play at SMU before their careers flame out. So there's a lot of talent on that roster as well. So the other thing too, that I don't know how much you've spent time thinking about, but when there is inevitable conference expansion again, which one of these programs is going to be most likely to be taken into a Power 5 or UCF. A power scenario? And UCF is one of them, but I think all four of the top teams that I have, Houston, SMU, Cincinnati, and UCF are all candidates for that. Cincinnati was a Big 12 candidate four or five years ago when they were trying to do this. So,
yes.
You know, it's...
And they all make sense for the same reasons.
Right. And I'll tell you now, Boise's my fifth. And Boise is probably the... Would you say UCF has passed Boise with best group of five brand nationally?
I'd say they're tied. Because Boise State is still a great brand. And, you know, we're not including BYU in this because they're an independent. But I would argue their brand is pretty strong, too.
Yeah. And, like, that's the reason why Boise State fell a little bit on my list, because they have terrible geography. But they're high on this list because they're a great national brand and everybody knows that Boise State is good.
I think they're similar to what we said about Oregon, where the geography is not great, but they have managed to overcome that. They've managed to transcend geography where, you know, everybody knows what they are. Everybody knows they're really good at football. I think high school coaches around the, especially west of the Rockies, understand that when Boise State likes one of their players, that Boise State, that's sort of a gateway to more things, because Boise State evaluates historically better. Now we'll see if that continues, but that certainly was the case under Chris Peterson and under Brian Harsin, that like once Boise State steps in, everybody else goes, oh, what are we missing with that guy?
Right. Right. And I think like if we would have done this list, Andy, like 5 or 6 years ago, we probably would have had Boise number one, because it was fresher, close to the, maybe not, but Boise has been...
It still has the challenges, and we're going to find out because they've got a new coach this year. So we're going to find out, is it a built-in, baked-in thing, or is it something that has to continually be nurtured?
I mean, their field is blue.
It's wonderful. It killed me to leave Coastal Carolina off this list, by the way.
Yeah. Well,
who doesn't want to live in Conway, South Carolina?
Yeah, I don't know. I've never been to Conway, South Carolina, but I'd like to go...
It's a beautiful little town. Access to Myrtle Beach, real quick. Jet skis, beach, you know.
Are you allowed to use jet skis in your recruiting pitch? Is that against NCAA rules?
I sure hope so. I think Kenny Powers should just come in on a jet ski and Jamie Chadwell should hop off the back and welcome to Coastal.
I think that's a funny reference that you put in there, because we're ranking on a random ranking. I don't know if you mentioned this, but top five comedies of all time.
Oh, yeah.
And I really struggled with Eastbound and Down. Like, I didn't know what to do.
Oh, there's so many good ones we left off that I left off my list. It's by no means complete because there are so many good ones.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's tough. But so I'm that's a spoiler, but I had SMU number five behind Boise State. My number six is the first to break away from the Mountain West and the American. And I put it here for many of the same reasons that I had the top five where they were. That clearly this is a school that cares about football, where football matters a lot. And they've always won, no matter the level. And they're still doing it. Appalachian State.
That's a good placement for them. They're a little bit lower on my list, but I think that they've been a pretty solid competitor since they beat Michigan 15 years ago or however
long. They were defending FCS national champs when they beat Michigan. That the level they've been at, they've won at everywhere, every time. So it's a place that football means a lot. And you know, I almost put Georgia Southern on this list for the same reason, but Georgia Southern has had some hiccups where, you know, there was the Brian Van Gorder hire where he's like, we're not going to run the option anymore. And you saw that went. And then they had another coach recently that they had to chase off after less than two seasons. So they have not been able to sustain things the way Appalachian State has. And I kind of wonder with Appalachian State, because it was sort of an all in the family. It was like a family business for a long time, because you had Jerry Moore. He gets replaced by Scott Satterfield, who was his longtime coordinator and who was quarterback for him years earlier. And Satterfield finally leaves for Louisville. And Drinkwitz is only there for a year. And now you've got Sean Clark there. But they've still, you know, they won with Drinkwitz. They were pretty good with Sean Clark. They didn't win the league, but remember, Coastal had a the best season it's ever had, and the Raging Cajuns had the best season they've ever had. So I think it just means that those programs are pretty competitive. But I think Appalachian State is a good job, and I think if you wind up there, there's a good chance you could wind up in a Power Five job pretty soon.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good placement for them. It's very close. But before I reveal my number six, I want to say that we had the same top five, so I was fairly certain that we were going to be pretty close. It might have been a different order, but I think we're all on the same page here, right?
Yeah, the Houston thing was the only thing that kind of
threw me. Oh, man, you're supposed to make me feel better. You're not supposed to make it feel worse.
Oh, no. I mean, look, you and I just feel like that UCF and Cincinnati have had more recent success than Houston, and that puts them over the top. We'll be right back after these words.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Okay, my number six is Memphis, and I don't know where they're going to land on your list. You gave me a little bit of a smile there, but you know the situation there in terms of location of talent, the type of offense that they play, the fact that the building labor has been done, and Mike Norvell and Justin Fuente have come and been successful. That team has been playing at a high level. Being in that area gives you access to multiple cities in Memphis. And it has a pretty clear plan to potentially create and facilitate an awesome football complex. So I don't know if that's a basketball school or if that's the way people view it, but Memphis has been a pretty steady competitor for years now, and it seems like they're only primed to get better.
I'm with you that they're kind of ascending, because this is they would have had no place on this list 10 years ago. You know, the Liberty Bowl is a dump. It felt like they didn't really care much about the program, but I would say Justin Fuente on, they've been, the administration has been behind it, and then the coaching hires have been good. So I also have them at number six. I have them at number seven. I'm sorry. They're the next one on the list. I had Appalachian State at number six, but I had Memphis at number seven for this reason, and they're good players. You know, Memphis is the part of Tennessee that has the most good players, which always complicated recruiting for the University of Tennessee coach, because Memphis is actually, the city itself is located closer to five other SEC schools. Now that's going to change as Nashville's population booms, and that becomes the hotbed. But you know, Memphis always was able to find a lot of those guys that kind of fell through the cracks in recruiting. And I think that's, Fuente did a good job with that. Norvell did a good job with that. There are plenty of good players in the region. You can dip into the Mississippi JUCOs. So I'm with you. As long as the administration keeps proving they care, this just keeps climbing the list.
Yeah. And then my number seven was App State. Do you want my number eight?
Yeah.
Temple.
Okay. I struggle with Temple.
I struggle with Temple too. But they've had some pretty good strings of success. They've been up and down. They've had some pretty important coaches that have gone on to, you know, show, but I think it's more so a show that they can do well in bigger jobs, and one's a head coach in the NFL now. So my situation here is based solely on being in Philadelphia and having access to New Jersey. It has been up and down, but to me, I feel like the location of this in general is just too much to overlook at this point.
So my number eight is San Diego State. Now Temple, I thought about that, and they put good resources into the program when they had Steve Addazio and then going into Matt Rhule. I don't know if it's sustainable. I think, you know, Al Golden brought the program back because they got kicked out of the Big East and they were that bad. I just worry they might fall into that again. I don't know that they created a really nice brand for themselves, really Golden through Jeff Collins, which I get that's why you're putting them here, that they had a string of Golden, Addazio, Rhule, Collins, where everybody found success. But I'm concerned that this is one where it could slide at any point.
Yeah. The reason why I feel like it's more less likely to slide is just because of its location. You know, we've got teams higher on our list. Like, I would say that Philadelphia is a better location than Memphis. You know, I mean, they've got access. No, I don't know.
It's better players in Memphis.
It's a discussion
in Memphis,
at least. Yeah.
No, you know. Well, no, Philly. First of all, Philly produces good players. I mean, we're about to watch Kyle Pitts go in the top 10. That's a Philly player. Yeah. And then, like you said, New Jersey, you can dip into the DMV. You have a lot of good players near you there. But I went with San Diego State at number 8 because you got a lot of good players near you there, and you live in San Diego.
Yeah, I mean, living in San Diego is a pretty solid situation. They should actually probably be number 1 just for that reason only.
I thought about it. And hey, Brady Hoke had a pretty good year there in his return. But I thought Rocky Long created a nice identity for them. Though I do kind of wonder, because the identity Rocky Long created for them was a smash mouth, like, we're going to pound you old school, kind of almost Wisconsin-like team. What if they decided to just go, you know, buck wild and have some fun there with the kind of skill talent you could get in LA County, Orange County, San Diego County?
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't put them on my list at all. And now I'm regretting it, which I think is what you usually do to me when I do something poorly. But
oh, you do this to me too.
But yeah, San Diego speaks for itself, access to talent. And also, when you go on recruiting trips, you're driving up the PCH. So, you know, I've heard worse ideas than you can.
If you want to take the scenic, you're probably driving up I-5.
We're taking the scenic route. That's
okay.
If you don't live in San Diego and you drive the 5, you're a psychopath. And if you do,
I called it I-5. I meant the 5 because people in California can't call interstates I whatever.
Yeah. All I'm saying is, let's just go look at the ocean. That's the reason we live there, right? I mean,
it is beautiful. Drive is just insane.
It's my favorite thing.
It's like a car commercial. It's like, yeah. It's like, I feel like there should be, you know, as you're driving, words should be passing you, like, what the interest rate is if you buy this car. So
yeah, I wonder if the interest rate of what your home loan is going to be to buy a $9 million shack near the beach. You know, that'd be a fun thing to see across your windshield too.
Well, that's why San Jose State came nowhere near making this list. You know, they're doing a good job. They're really doing a great job at San Diego State right now. But imagine telling your assistant coaches what kind of house you can buy with what you can pay.
I've got a buddy who lives in Sherman Oaks, and I don't know if I'm blowing secret, but he's buying a house right now, and 1,500 square foot homes in Sherman Oaks are $1 million. So I can't imagine what it is anywhere along coastal cities.
San Jose is more expensive than Sherman Oaks too.
Right. I mean, right.
Sherman Oaks
right.
is the San Fernando, or kind of the Valley. You know, San Jose is Bay Area, Silicon Valley. And, you know, I remember when I was in San Jose for the national title game a few years ago, I went to get something to eat, and I'm just sitting there eating, and I'm on Zillow. I'm like, all right, let's see if I wanted to buy my house, like the square footage of my house, what would that cost here? And it was just insane. I'm just like, I would have to live in a two bedroom apartment there.
Yeah. Life in Omaha would not be so bad.
There's your Boise State argument right there.
My buddy Brian Windhorst lives in Omaha, and he'll give you a 2-hour seminar why it's the best city in America to live in. And
him and Warren Buffett.
Yeah, because you can, your money goes a lot further there. And it's actually a pretty neat town. Call me up, Nebraska recruiting coordinator, for more recruiting tips. But, you know, it's just insane. Okay, so my number nine, Andy, is, and I'm going to lean on you on this because I put them in my top 10.
Was Temple your eight or your seven?
Temple was my eight. App State was my seven.
Okay, good. I got you. Okay.
Number nine, and I'm not even going to say anything, but I felt like I had to put them on my list, and I just want to know if you think I'm nuts, and if I am, then I'll change it. But U.S. South Florida.
That's USF. My number nine.
Oh, okay. Good. It's, relieved.
It is a good job if they do what they're about to say, what they say they're going to do. And, you know, they're building some facilities. You don't have an on-campus stadium, so you got to deal with that. They can spin it all they want that they play in the same stadium as the Super Bowl champs. You might bump into Tom Brady. But the fact of the matter is they don't have an on-campus stadium. So that is a tough thing to overcome. But if they have nice on-campus facilities, which they have not for most of the time they've had a football program, then you can overcome that. And look, there's so much talent on the Gulf Coast of Florida. Like, yes, they get players from Miami. Yes, they get players from Broward County, Palm Beach County. They get Orlando, Space Coast, all that. But if they just stuck to Pasco, Hillsborough, Pinellas, Polk, Manatee, Sarasota, Collier counties, there's good football there.
I think this is a potential play.
DeSoto and Hardy County, I don't want my country folks to get mad at me.
But it's a good potential play. A place that you feel like has a chance. The thing I will say is the name of the university is kind of misleading.
The good news is you're not recruiting anybody who doesn't already understand that. Like, if they recruited a bunch out of state, it would be very confusing. Like, you're the University of South Florida, so you're in Miami, right? No.
Everybody thinks it's in Miami. It's not.
Then wouldn't you be the University of West Florida? No, that's in Pensacola. So, yeah, it is very confusing there. But the good news is nearly everybody they're recruiting is either from Florida or South Georgia, so they already know that.
Yeah. Okay, so my number 10 is a MAC school.
Okay.
Which I think is kind of weird because I don't know if that's, but well, I think.
Good. I'm glad we're going to have every conference represented because my number 10 is a Conference USA school.
Okay. My number 10 is Northern Illinois. And I know that I've said it recently on this podcast that Chicago isn't necessarily a talent rich area, but I feel like every team in the MAC can recruit every city in the Midwest effectively. And nobody has done better in the MAC than the Huskies, both at evaluating talent.
Oh, they're so good in the Chicago suburbs. It's ridiculous. Yeah,
and they have a situation in place where things are just rolling. And they also don't spend a lot of money, and they have money. So to me, I just feel like this seems to be a place that you can go and win if you're a coach. It seems to be a place that can recruit in multiple areas. It also does well in Chicago. And it seems to be a nice jumping off point for coaches. I don't know if you're ever going to be in the playoff discussion like some of the other teams on this list. Whether or not they'll ever make the playoff is a different discussion, but at least they're in the discussion. But I do think that this is a really well-built, sturdy program that you can grow through.
I think you're exactly right. That's a good one. I feel bad that I left them off, but they would be kind of like, you know, number 11-ish right there. My number 10 is Florida Atlantic. And it's one of those where you're another bounce back magnet. I mean, you better be in the portal hard if you're Willie Taggart at Florida Atlantic. But you know, it's a place where they will spend and they will use resources. And you saw that with Lane Kiffin. Now we'll see if Willie can rehabilitate after the Florida State debacle. But you know, I think Howard Schnellenberger, who passed away this past weekend, he's the one who created that program. He's the one who set it up. And, you know, he made sure that he didn't get everything he wanted. Schnelly wanted to put a dome on that stadium. He didn't get that. But it's a pretty little stadium in Boca Raton. So they have the resources where you can go there and win the league. You should be competitive in the league every year, but you should win the league, you know, once every 2-3 years. And yeah. That's the thing. If you're in that position, you're going to, because let's be honest, we're ranking these as jobs, but if you're a coach looking at a job like that, you're not looking at it as your forever job. You're just not. And I think the administration and the ADs understand this. I don't know if necessarily all the fan bases understand this, but I think most fans understand that. So that one is one where you can go, you should be able to win quickly. Now they've had situations where they didn't. They've had to fire coaches. The Carl Pellini thing was a disaster. You know, Charlie Partridge didn't work out there. But when they get it right, they're fun. And again, that's a place people want to transfer to. If things didn't work out at your Power Five school, you might want to go to Boca. So that's the number 10 for me. There were some of these I thought about and left off the list. You know, Temple I left off. From a pure location standpoint, there's two that I was curious if you were going to put them on there because I know how much location matters to you. But Tulane and UNLV.
Yeah.
Like Tulane's in a great location, but it's just historically very hard to win there.
Well, Tulane was one that I almost put number 10 over NIU because Tulane has been one of the universities that has been most bought into trying to capitalize on NIL. Like they've spent a lot of time with education programs and trying to put their athletes in the best position, and they've incorporated it into the sales.
We had Troy Dannon and Gabe Feldman on the podcast.
That's right. That's right. I think that's where I learned it from, listening to you. But I'm very curious in 5 years, once this transfer waiver passes, if this list gets rejiggered a little bit, because transfer destinations and recruiting destinations can sometimes be very different. And it's like, I didn't put San Diego State on my list, but if I were somebody transferring and wanted to play in a place that has won recently, San Diego State would be a very attractive landing spot. So would Boca. Just picturing Lane Kiffin, sun-kissed Lane Kiffin with aviators on, getting off an airplane in Boca. I don't know why he would ever leave that job, to be honest, but you know, to each their own. I was in Boca Raton last month.
Millions of dollars to coach Ole Miss. That's why.
Was he hurting financially before? I don't know. But yeah, I get it. I get it. But also, nobody was in their vibe better than Lane Kiffin when he lived in Boca. So I think this is a very interesting list. I know that our top fives were the same for the. I think we're on the same page really for this whole list, but. You know, I think it's just because we view recruiting and territory and geography very similarly. Now, I also think
there's one I left off, Ari, that I want to mention that would have absolutely been on this list. It might have even been in the top five, probably, you know, 10 years ago, that doesn't make it at all now. And it kind of makes me sad because, you know, we talked about Appalachian State as a place where people care deeply about football. East Carolina is not on this list.
Yeah.
East Carolina is a place that loves, like Greenville, North Carolina, they love football there. They love the Pirates. And, you know, they had it going for a little bit with Ruffin McNeil as the head coach and Lincoln Riley as the OC, but then they just sort of fell off the map. And I hope they get it back because that's a fun place to see a football game from. It's a terrifying place to go if you're a Power Five opponent when they're really good. And I just, it makes me sad that they're not on this list because they should be.
There's one also in the American that I wanted to maybe mention too and get your thoughts on. And it didn't really seem to fit because there's different standards here, but Navy. They're always a solid football team.
The Service Academy jobs are hard. That's, yeah. It's just, I think Kidney Matalolo and Jeff Munkin and Troy Calhoun are just really good coaches. Their jobs are really hard, but they're really good coaches. And I think that those are not, look at Army. Army was a terrible job. Munkin makes it look like a good job because Munkin's really good, but Army was not a great job. And Navy, you know, look, Paul Johnson sort of set things up and then Kidney Matalolo kept it rolling, but it's hard. It is hard to be that consistently good. So I put that more on the coaches than on the job itself.
But if you look and listen back to our podcast, Houston, UCF, South Florida, Cincinnati, Memphis, ECU, Temple, SMU, Navy were all mentioned. And even Tulane was mentioned, I think. Yeah, I mentioned them.
Yep.
That is a really good conference. I mean, top to bottom, I think it's a really good conference.
I agree.
I think that you could make an argument that it has been better than the Pac-12 the last few years. And I don't know if it's if that's too much because they don't have the elite level top tier talent. But in a world where college football reform is always a discussion and playoff reform is discussion, like this is the Power Six conference. And I don't know how we feel about it.
I'm Mike Oresco got to you. Mike Oresco put a bug in your ear.
It really is, though. It really is. They've got really good players. Like Cincinnati last year would have been the third or fourth best team in every conference in America outside of the SEC last year.
You said the Pac-12. Let's see. You know, over the last 4 or 5 years, what Pac-12 teams have been, would you say, have been better than UCF, than Cincinnati, Oregon?
I mean, I guess it depends on what year and what year we're talking about for the other schools.
I know, because Oregon had the year where it fired Mark Helfrich, but yeah, I mean.
It's just like the thing with me is that USC always.
Oregon and USC, I think, are consistently better in terms of talent.
Just talent-wise, but doesn't mean that they're better teams. You know, I don't know. I think Cincinnati would have been able to beat USC and Oregon last year.
Well, and if you put Cincinnati and UCF, because that's always the argument is if you put them in those leagues, how do they fare week to week?
I
think they fare pretty well week to week.
I think Cincinnati would be fine week to week if they're playing Oregon State and then Arizona State. And, you know, they might not have been undefeated, but I think they would have been a two-loss team maybe.
Yeah, they would be in the top half of the league.
For sure.
If you put them in there.
Yeah.
And I think Houston had that would have that capability. Navy would have that capability because they're a tough out. They're a change up stylistically, and Ken's a good coach. I think you're right about that. That I will say the American is as a football product is extremely fun to watch. And then you've got Tulsa's been good the past year or two. That helps too. But I mean, it's just a fun product to watch. And yeah, you know, it's going to be interesting because I don't foresee a lot of realignment on the horizon. Like, I don't really know what moves there are to make other than, let's say, the Big 12 and the Pac-12 tried to merge and sell their TV rights as one, which is actually what they were talking about doing before the Pac-10 tried to raid the Big 12 last time. I've suggested the Big 12 should just try to raid the Pac-12 and take their best schools. But that's a complicated thing too, because then you got a conference that covers all four time zones. I'm not sure that's feasible. Right. So I'm not sure there's another big realignment move. And that's the problem for these schools at the top of our list, because you know, all the stuff that UCF's doing, all the stuff that Cincinnati's done, all the stuff that Houston's done has been with an eye on getting into the Power Five. I remember talking to Tillman Fertitta at Houston, you know, that about he'll straight up tell you they're doing this to get in the Power Five, but I'm just not sure there's going to be a spot.
I think everybody at the top five schools, at least that we mentioned on our list, has their eyes on that. Again, we don't know exactly how realistic that is or when and if that opportunity is going to present itself. But I think that all the schools, I think Houston, UCF, Cincinnati, SMU, and Boise State would all be good Power Five programs. There are a lot of Power Five programs that are way worse than those schools.
Yeah, no, I agree. But again, it's not about how good you are on the field,
right?
Although that is a component of it when people are open to the idea of expanding, and I'm just not sure anybody is. All right, that is our. Oh, let me throw one more at you because this one's interesting, just because of the amount of coaches it spat out into different places who succeeded. Arkansas State in a row had as the head coach Hugh Freeze, Gus Malzahn, Brian Harsin. Each of them stayed a year, left, and went to a Power Five job. Well, Harsin went to Boise State, but went to a better job. And then Blake Anderson, we know his situation. Unfortunately, his wife passed away while he was there. He went to Utah State to take that job. I feels more like a change of scenery thing than anything else. But you know, you got Butch Jones there now at Arkansas State. I think he's going to be fine. He won at Central Michigan. He won at Cincinnati. I think he's going to win there. That's not a bad job either.
Yeah, I agree with you. Somebody asked me a mailbag question a while back, Andy, that said, if you could make the sixth power conference that is in in playoff contention based on only group of five teams, which like 12 would you pick? And I think that Arkansas State might be in that list too. You know, I think obviously I made in my
Appalachian
top
State.
Appalachian State.
I might put Georgia Southern in there. It's how much do you care? And how much do the people around, like, I want to see a full stadium and I want to see, because I think you can build a brand that way. You know, it's not about cable footprint anymore. The problem is the last round of realignment was all about cable footprint. It's all about how many cable subscribing households do you have in your area? That's not as important anymore. Now it's brand. So
right.
like East Carolina, when they were good, was a brand, you know. Boise State is a brand. UCF is a brand. Cincinnati is a brand. And that's what you got to do is be consistently good. Arkansas State, the Red Wolves, those are that's your brand of good Tuesday, Wednesday night football in the Sun Belt. Now, I would argue that Louisiana, speaking of rebranding, they just want to be called Louisiana now. Billy Napier has them building a pretty nice brand. The only thing that kept me from considering them for this list is that success seems very Billy Napier based. And when Billy Napier leaves, can it be continued?
Yeah. Yeah. I like the idea of full stadiums, entertaining to watch. I mean, I think you can make the case that Memphis might be the most entertaining team to watch on Saturday.
They were so much like, and that's what interests me about Florida State, because when Norvell was at Memphis, that was the most entertaining team in America to watch.
It was, yeah. The Anthony Miller years.
Can he make Florida State that? I don't know. But that was fun.
Yeah.
So you're right. And I think the way, you know, the Fuente years and the Norvell years turned Memphis football into something fun probably helped that the Memphis basketball team was down at the same time, and so people wanted to refocus there. Now they do love the Grizzlies in Memphis. They support that team very, very well. So, you know, that's a town that'll get behind a winner or an entertaining product. I mean, even when the Grizzlies haven't been good, they've been lovable. And I think that's what Memphis's football program, because they're so much fun to watch, they've gotten a lot of support out of that too.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm all for entertaining football. So, you know, well, how that factors into the national championship discussion and all that is always separate from that. But these are really good football programs. And even though they don't get as much attention as some of the other Power Five schools, like I'm happy that we did this.
Oh, absolutely. And look, this is as a college football junkie, I'll take a good American, like a good Friday night American game that ends up like 48-43. What's better than that?
Nothing. I mean, and the fact that we get it on weeknights, so it's a never-ending privilege.
Well, I mean, one of the most fun games I've been to in the past 5 years was UCF-USF on Black Friday in 2017. That was tremendous. That was as fun a football game as I've ever covered. And they call that place the Bounce House because it really does feel like you're in a kid's bounce house when they're going. And, you know, I think that's the sort of thing that, you know, we talk a lot about the Power Five schools. And look, I'll be honest, we talk more about the Power Five schools because they have more fans. They just do.
Yep.
And we're not in the business of giving people what they don't want.
Exactly. But
there is really fun football to be watched. And I know the audience of this show appreciates that because, you know, you guys are listening to a national college football show. You're not listening to a show about one conference or one team. So you love the sport in its entirety. So I realize I'm preaching to the choir here, but those American and Mountain West games and some of those Sun, like Louisiana, Coastal Carolina, I think was that a Tuesday or a Wednesday night?
It was a Tuesday night, I think.
It was a Tuesday.
Yeah.
That game was so awesome. It was so much fun.
It was so awesome.
So,
and the cool thing I love about college football the most is, and again, people listening to the show can, you know, appreciate that, is that college football fans watch every game and enjoy it and just love the sport. And it's just like in the NBA, do NBA fans want to watch the Jazz Kings? I mean, some do, but it just, the only other sport that I think is comparable is the NFL.
Here. I mean, yeah, but I think the NFL probably has more broad based because of fantasy. There's more broad based appeal. You know, there's a ton of Alabama fans or Ohio State fans that just aren't as interested in what else is going on around the country. But I do feel like, I think you're right. In college football, there is a bigger group of people who kind of want to know about the whole picture.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the fact that recruiting results are a domino effect. And if something happens in another fan base or another program, that could have an impact on yours. And the fact that it's all interconnected, not that free agency and the draft isn't the same way, but this is going on year round, and what's going on at other schools could directly have an impact on what happens at your school, I think is also fascinating.
Well, and you know, I dipped my toe in the recruiting waters last week, wrote about Hero Canoe, who is he's a German defensive tackle. He came over to California, plays at Santa Margarita Catholic in Orange County. And he wasn't, you know, he was going to play last fall and this fall and then sign. And then the season gets delayed. So he played his first high school. He'd only done drills in Germany. So he played his first high school football game. They played some club ball, I think, in the fall. But his first high school game on March 12th, that was a Friday. The following Monday, USC and Washington offered. He's now played, I believe he's played three games now. And his offer list is, I think it's close to 20, but on Friday alone, he got offers from LSU, Clemson, Texas, and Texas A&M.
And that's is that the kid with the Ndamukong Suh comparisons?
He looks just from a physical standpoint, body wise, he's very similar to a young Ndamukong Suh. Ndamukong Suh in high school was 6'4", 275. Not a lot of bad weight. This kid is 6'4", 293, very little bad weight. He's all thighs and butt and all, you know, big legs. And his coach kind of wants him to do that Sue thing where he just lines him up at nose and says, penetrate.
Just kill everybody.
That's what he did in Nebraska.
Yeah.
So he's got a lot to learn about the finer. Like, they played Don Bosco in their second game, and Don Bosco might be, you know, one of the best teams in the country. DJ Uiagalelei's little brother is a sophomore there, Mateo. And the Don Bosco offensive line, I think at least three of them are going Power Five, but I think all of them are going FBS.
Yeah.
And he struggled at times, but he had some great plays where when he did get low, they couldn't block him. And so that's why these college coaches are jumping in. Cause it's when you say, oh, this is his second game and their left tackle is going to USC and their left guard's going to UNLV and their other tackle is being pursued by everybody and his brother. It's pretty telling. Like, there's a lot of raw material to work with. So I'm excited to follow that one. Follow Ari for all of your national recruiting coverage at The Athletic. By the way, dollar a month deal still going on. If you're not subscribed to The Athletic, do it. Just do it and give us a year. Give us $12 and give us a year, and we'll show you why you're going to want to pay full price to renew. Because it will become such a fixture in your daily life. And it's not just what we do in college football. I mean, when the 49ers traded up to get the number three pick on Friday, and that trade involved the Dolphins and involved the Eagles, we had, in one of our Slack channels, somebody posted all the different stories we had based on that trade. It was like 10 different stories. Every angle you could possibly imagine we covered, no matter what team you root for.
The people who sign up tend to stay, so we hope you'll give us a chance. And it's kind of crazy how many talented people we work with in every beat in every sport. It's insane. You know, I think that you'll like it.
We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Now we have to move on to our random ranking, which, if you know, you can read my random rankings in my Dear Andy mailbag column every week, or you can listen to a different version here. Right now, we are doing the top five TV comedies. We did dramas last week. Mari and I decided to do TV shows. We figured we really need to break it up. I almost feel like we need to break this up even further. This is pretty broad. Picking five about killed me, Ari.
It was impossible, but I, yeah. I did the best that I could, and just the shows that I find hilarious and can't get enough of. So, you know, should we get started?
Number five? Yeah, let's go number five.
I have 5A and 5B. Is that cheating?
Okay. Listen, this was hard. I don't blame you.
Okay. Just missing the cut was King of Queens. I love that show, and it's very indicative of the way my life is in real life. But number five is Arrested Development. I think that it had a short run at it, and I know that they recently created some new episodes, but the first two seasons of that show are, I'm very into subtle humor, and I just think that it's just an incredible show. The characters are dynamic. Tobias Funke is one of my favorite characters in the history of television. Job is hilarious. And if you haven't watched the show, George Bluth Sr. is hilarious. I mean, the whole cast is hilarious. And the writing...
I can't hear the final countdown without thinking of Job.
Yeah. It's just those subtle facial expressions. The thing that I don't like about comedy, Andy, these days is that it's over the top and they want to hand the audience the punchline rather than letting the audience put it together themselves.
Yeah, I think they've gotten away from that. King of Queens is more here's your joke on a platter. Bang Theory, your traditional multi-camera network sitcom. Like I don't know how anybody watches those.
Yeah, King of Queens is just funny because it's just something like that I loved as a kid, but like my real humor is just subtle, quick facial expressions that help you understand what you might not have gotten if you weren't paying attention. And it's like, it's the perfect example is like Dumb and Dumber to me is the funniest movie of all time, or at least was for a large period of my time.
You and my wife have a lot to talk about.
It's the greatest movie ever. And in that movie, everything is subtly funny. It's not stupid. It's hilarious. And it's beautifully written. 20 years later or 15 years later goes by and they make Dumb and Dumber 2. And that was one of the worst movies I've ever seen because the entire way that they provided the joke shifted. Fart jokes and bathroom jokes and all the stuff that people think is funny now. What made Dumb and Dumber so funny the first time was that they were so subtly stupid that it was hilarious. The Samsonite thing, the pullover thing, you know,
he must work just, out.
It's completely different. It wasn't even the same type of humor. And I like the old humor where they have to make the audience work for it a little bit. And I think that Arrested Development is the perfect example of having to pay attention and getting the subtlety of why it's such a beautiful show.
I definitely have a have to pay attention one on here in a little bit, but my number five, there are some that they'd kind of slip in there too. But my number five is Community. Mm-hmm. I love Community. This is a murderer's row. I mean, Donald Glover's gone on to create Atlanta. He obviously has the Childish Gambino music career, just a phenomenal talent. And then you've got, you know, Danny Putty. He and Danny Putty were fantastic together with your Troy and Abed in the morning. But Allison Brie, Gillian Jacobs, Joel McHale is awesome. And then Ken Jeong. I mean, Chevy Chase was not even, I mean, he apparently was the big problem as they were filming it, but it's freaking Chevy Chase. And they found ways to use him, even though he was kind of curmudgeonly. But it just, that show, whenever, especially when they do the theme episodes, like the paintball one was just, they always brought something different to the table. They were always trying to make you laugh in a newer and different way. And it's amazing that was a network sitcom. Now, I can't remember where it did its last season. You can watch them all on Netflix or Amazon Prime now, but it moved to one of the streaming services for its final season. But it was just outstanding and surprising, because I'm not sure that gets made on a network now.
Donald Glover might be the most talented human being to ever walk the face of the earth.
Oh, it's insane, because Atlanta's a great show. And I mean, he's a very talented rapper.
Yeah. I just started Atlanta. I'm on like episode 4. And as I was looking through lists to make sure that I didn't forget anything, a lot of people had Atlanta in the top 10 comedies of all time. And yeah. I don't even know if it's completely a comedy. So the first few episodes I thought
that
insane.
That was when I struggled with, because I was like, and there's a lot of shows now that blur the lines between.
Yeah.
Comedy and drama that it's one time hard to tell.
During I was like 26 and I was at the Big Ten championship game, and I got a phone call from a friend in LA, and he said, hey, I won 2 tickets to a private show for Childish Gambino, be here on Sunday. Whoa. So I flew across the country to Los Angeles the day after the Big Ten championship game, after they revealed the playoff field, and went to a undisclosed address, and we landed. He picked me up, and at like 5 o'clock, the concert was at 7. They sent you the address to the people who won these tickets.
Wow.
And it was just a house in the hills. It was like a 5,000 square foot home.
Was there like a password?
You had to walk in, you had to show the ticket, then you had to hand your phones, and everybody, and they had like Cheetos and Doritos and whatever. And there were like maybe 50 people in there. And then were all downstairs in this living room in just somebody's house. They rented this house. And we were all down there for like 35 minutes. Donald Glover is upstairs somewhere. And then like after 30 minutes, he comes downstairs. He's not wearing a shirt. He just no shoes, walks downstairs, gets in front of everybody in this living room, performs like 7 to 10 songs, makes no eye contact with everybody. After the last song, drops the microphone down, makes no contact, and walks like a sleepwalker up the stairs again. And then that was it. It was over. And it was like Donald Glover was performing, or Childish Gambino was performing his latest record for just 50 random fans in a Hollywood Hills house. And I could have like slapped him in the face. I was so close to him. It was like one of the most insane things I've ever experienced in my life.
That's like when the national title game was in Dallas, I think it was the first year of the playoff. It was the Ohio State Oregon title game. They had a media party for the reporters covering the game, and they booked Casey Musgraves for it.
I know. We talk about that today.
I mean,
there was like 75 people in that room, Andy. I was there.
Yeah, I know, but there were only like 10 of us by the end of the concert standing in front of her.
She's and like
I
was a like, super oh my God, famous this is person freaking just performing for all those idiot sports writers.
So same trailer, different park had come out. The next pageant material, which was probably kind of her introduction to the wider world, hadn't come out yet. But she was, I think she played some of the Pageant Material songs, and I just, it was like, oh my God, this is, because I had listened to Same Trailer, Different Park like hundreds of times before that show. And so I was ready to go, but everybody else just kind of walked off. And I'm like, it's Kacey Musgraves. That's what's wrong with you.
Had she already been nominated or won a Grammy at that point too? Like, she wasn't on her way up. She had already been nominated for a Grammy.
Yeah. Yeah. She definitely been nominated. So I mean, it's just, you know, follow Your Arrow had been a hit, I think, at that point. And so it was crazy. And I was just like, what are you people doing? You're going to play video games and Kacey Musgraves is 5 feet away.
I know. It's like, God knows how much they paid to book her, but that was like a really interesting, that was my first time in Dallas too. Yeah, man, time flies. Okay. My number four, Andy, is Entourage, because it didn't count as a drama. And Ari Gold,
I think, it wasn't a drama.
Ari Gold, I think you could say, is the best character in the history of television. I could think you should say that with a straight face.
No. He's a good character.
He's one of
the
best.
Best character in the history of television.
He's one of the best characters in the history of sitcoms. And this isn't even a sitcom, of comedy television series.
Let me put it this way. There's people on my number four and number three who will easily best Ari Gold as...
Okay, we'll see about that.
Comedic characters. But yes, he's wonderful. The problem with that show is just, other than him, the relationship between the guys was boring as hell after season one. And the whole, you know, Medellin, is it going to get filmed? Who cares? It just, I don't know. It became a vehicle for cameos, and it just, I just didn't think it was that funny. Also, no one in real life would dump Sloan. Sorry.
Yeah. Sloan might be the name of my future daughter one day, because she's just
run that by your wife.
She loves the name too. So we'll talk about it. If that day comes,
your fiance kind of looks like Emmanuel Shikri, by the way. So.
Wow. That's a really nice compliment, because I'm literally in love with that woman. Both of them.
I was going to say, hopefully both of them. Is she on your laminated card?
Yeah. Yeah. But I just thought the show was also very entertaining. And I guess there were some seasons towards the end. It's the type of show that you can watch six episodes and just like, I don't know. I just love California too. It might not be the funniest show in the world, but I just think it's a really, really good show.
It did have one of my favorite end of the show fade to the closing credits song. When they're going to the Cannes Film Festival and they need to get a ride, and they hitch a ride, and then it fades to black and Kanye West's Good Life starts playing.
Yeah.
That is one of the all time great fade to credits.
I need to rewatch it, because it's been, maybe I just have it on there because I haven't seen all the new episodes, or I haven't watched the episodes as an adult. I watched all of them in college in 2005 and haven't really rewatched them. But
I wouldn't do it if I were you. It's not going to go the way you think it is.
It's just Johnny Drama, Ari. I watch Ari Gold compilations.
If I had been a college student when Entourage came out, I would have loved Entourage. But I was a grown up. And it hit me differently, and it'll hit you differently as a grown up too.
Yeah. Okay. Well, who's your number four?
All right. My number four is The Office. I mean, just cultural impact, all that. And I know everybody says, oh, the British one's better. The British one's better. Okay. Well, they didn't make much of the British one. They made a lot of the American one because people love those characters.
Yeah.
And I mean, the episode where Jan throws the party, and Michael is showing off the tiny little flat screen TV, and Dwight is crawling around the house looking for imperfections. I mean, the giant one. I could spend an entire episode of the podcast talking about that episode of The Office, or the basketball game episode. So that's the thing. There's so many just iconic episodes, and the characters are really quotable and just lovable, hateable, whatever you want to describe Michael Scott as.
Yeah, The Office is really good. It didn't make my top five, but that doesn't mean I didn't enjoy it. I actually don't think Dwight is that funny, and I think there's something wrong with me, because everybody loves Dwight, and I just kind of, he irritates me for some reason.
You know why?
The way I irritate people, I guess.
You see a little of yourself in him. I mean, you don't grow beets or anything.
Yeah, but maybe I'm off
you see the world from a different viewpoint, you have very strong opinions about the things you do have opinions about. I mean, you're very Dwight Schrute-esque.
I know, but if you go back and listen to all of our lists, maybe not the food lists, but the football lists, they're not crazy. I mean, we're all on the same page here. But yeah, maybe I'm the Dwight Schrute of sports journalism.
That it's possible. I think that's what it is.
And now my top three are just going to be the layups that everybody has and will be the same all thing right. that who's, everybody else has. So my number three is Seinfeld. I mean, I don't even know if I have to explain it. It's just, it's Seinfeld, you know, it's a beautifully written show. So it's brilliant.
You're going to have one in there in your top three that I don't.
You're already anticipating what number two is then, I bet.
It's related to Seinfeld, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
I love Seinfeld too. I have Seinfeld as my number two. My number three is Veep. And I don't know that there's a show in the last 20 years that has made me laugh harder than Veep at various points. It is just, it's one of those that, and they sort of build on jokes and just layer things over the top of one another. And it's perfectly cast. I mean, Timothy Simons as Jonah is like, I'm not sure there's a better cast character than that. He's just the only person who could play that. Gary Cole, who I love in everything he's in, was awesome as the political consultant. Sue is just sort of above the fray, but Julia Louis-Dreyfus is unbelievable as the lead. I think people remembered Anna Chlumsky from My Girl, but she was just outstanding in the show. So that's one that if you haven't watched Veep, it's on HBO Max. Every episode, just go watch it. It's you will bust a gut.
I've never seen Veep, and everybody loves it, and I'm gonna watch it.
As a reporter, Mike McClintock, Matt Walsh's character, like he's the PR guy. He's the spokesman. Like he's entertaining enough, just because you've dealt with so many PR people. That you imagine that's what it's like when they go back to see their bosses. Like,
yeah,
that's exactly what we imagine.
I just have never really been that drawn to politics. So I need to get past that. I think.
Well, the early seasons are pretty apolitical. Okay. As weird as that sounds. It kind of couldn't help itself there toward the end, but the early seasons are apolitical. And
cause like, I never even got into like House of Cards, Nevada,
but you'll be able to. House of Cards had one good season.
And I never got into West Wing, all the political shows about, you know, running for office and holding public office have never appealed to me. And I know this is a comedy, so it's completely different.
Yeah.
And Elaine Benes is the number one, is the lead, right? So I have to.
Yes.
And she's Elaine. She doesn't get to use her real name. Okay, so my number two
is Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Is Curb. Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Curb is my second favorite show of all time, and it's just the humor in it. Maybe as a Jewish man, I just can relate to it more because he's got a lot of those funky Jewish friends that I know.
I like it. I can watch Curb, but Larry David, the character, who I don't know how much he differs from Larry David, the human, he's just an unlikable character. And in certain episodes that really works. Like I love the episode where he picks up the hooker to use the diamond lane.
It's the funniest thing in the world. The Palestinian chicken episode is hilarious. There are so many iconic moments, but the thing about it too, is that sometimes you hate Larry, but sometimes you can see his point. And like the thing that I love about Seinfeld and Curb, and they're interwoven a little bit, is that they use things that we notice about life all the time as an entire basis for 30 minutes of comedy. And sometimes it's stuff that is small, sometimes it's stuff that's big, but you know, just picking at the human element a little bit, I think is just amazing. And the cast and characters of Curb Your Enthusiasm, the supporting cast is all amazing. Everybody else that's in the show, like Richard Lewis and Jeff, his manager, everything that show has to offer, I think, is perfection.
So I had Seinfeld as my number two, and it's just, I think it's about as it changed television, really. It got us out of the multi-camera sitcom. And it's weird because it kind of started out as that. They had didn't they have the laugh track early on? And but they just sort of evolved as they went, and,
right.
and it was unbelievable. But you know, you just think about these episodes, and like the C stories of a good Seinfeld episode would have been like a three story. Episode arc on another show.
Right.
Like,
right.
I the one I always go back to is the Bizarro Jerry. So it's funny enough that Elaine has befriended a trio that looks exactly like Jerry and George and Kramer. You know, this is Gene and this guy we just call Feldman. But that is the same episode as Man Hands and the same episode that George is carrying around the picture of the model in his wallet with the,
yeah, the club. Yeah, and
the same episode.
Yeah. I mean, it's just... It is just nonstop. Who's your favorite character?
Main cast or recurring?
I guess recurring. I mean, those are two different things, but like...
I'm a big Jackie Chiles fan.
Yeah. Yeah, I love Newman, and I love George Costanza, and I love George Costanza's Ari? Father. Hello, yeah, I mean... The whole show is perfect. It probably would be number one, but are you? I'm very curious to know what your number one is. I'll go first if you want.
What
though.
Is yours? Yes,
mine is Family Guy. I think Family Guy is the greatest television show ever created, and everybody who will probably freak out. Go ahead, I get it. Either you agree with me or you think I'm a moron. There's no in between.
No, I like Family Guy, but there is a much better animated show. Actually, you know what? I screwed this up. Bump Community off my list. They're not number five.
Okay.
I don't know how I messed this up. So The Office is now number five. Veep is now number four. Seinfeld is now number three. The Simpsons is now number two. And The Simpsons is one of the greatest TV shows of all time. And one of the most interesting things that I've noticed with Disney Plus is how much my kids have gotten into The Simpsons. And they love it just as much as I did growing up.
Well, the thing about The Simpsons is that I used to love it when I was a kid, too. But its subtlety, kids just follow the storylines because it's a cartoon, but don't really pick up on all the subtle adult humor that's in it. And then when you're an adult, you pick it up, and it's amazing for multiple reasons. But to me, I don't understand how the people who wrote Family Guy think of the things that they think of. Nothing is off limits. Everybody's a target. Every religion, every race... It doesn't matter who or what you are. Everybody gets made fun of equally. And it's all like, to me, we're all in it together. And the way that they make fun of people.
But there is a show that makes fun of everybody that does it better.
Who?
South Park.
Yeah.
South Park is the greatest comedy of all time.
Is your number one?
Yeah.
I never got into South Park. And not because I don't like it. It's just, you know how sometimes in life things just like miss you? You just don't.
Yeah.
And like South Park is better. There are two types of people. People who love Family Guy and people who think South Park is better. And I need to watch more South Park to really get into the bottom of it.
I like both of them. I like both of them, but South Park is just smarter. South Park is the some of the best satire that has ever appeared.
I mean, I think Family Guy is really smart.
It's.
I think people think it's like layup childish humor. It's not. I think it's really smart.
No, I mean I've watched a lot of Family Guy. Yeah. I watched Family Guy when it originally came out. Was mad when it was originally canceled and was happy it came back.
Yeah.
But South Park is a little different level. Like they're just, I guess, more no holds barred, if that makes sense. And. Yep. This may have to do with where, because you talk about, you know, you watching Entourage in college. So South Park came out when I was a sophomore in college. So it was one of those shows that everybody that age immediately was attracted to. And so it hit me in just the right spot. Like I was going to ask, how old were you in 1997?
10.
Okay. So your parents, if they were responsible, would have never let you watch South Park.
My parents bought me a Tupac CD when I was 8 years old.
Okay, well, maybe they did, but you like you would not have gotten most of the jokes.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't understand the jokes. It's all And that's so what I love.
You were a solid 7 or 8 years away from understanding the jokes. So that's probably why and Family Guy came out 2 or 3 years later. Did you watch Family Guy at all in its original iteration?
Oh yeah. I was day one with Family Guy.
Okay.
The opening scene of Family Guy, the second I saw the opening scene, I don't even know if you remember it. Just go type in opening scene Family Guy and the second that happened, I was in.
Well, you know what the best Family Guy scene of all time is?
I think that that's an impossible thing to say, but I want to know what
it's Peter fighting the chicken. Peter fighting the chicken.
See, because I think that's the worst. I don't think that's funny.
I love Peter fighting the chicken. It's not quite the best. Like the best Simpsons scene of all time is Sideshow Bob stepping on the rakes.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that was funny about Family Guy in the beginning was that it always had scenes that took longer, and then the longer the something stupid was happening, the funnier it got because it was insane that they were wasting that much time on it. But I just like, I'm going to like, I wish I had scenes that I could just play for people to explain it, but I just think the show is perfect. Some seasons are better than others. The earlier seasons are probably the best, but it's laugh out loud funny. And I don't know that most shows make you laugh out loud cackle as much as Family Guy.
Well, Veep does, Simpsons, obviously, South Park does. And South Park, here's the thing with South Park, because they were never on an actual broadcast network, I don't think they ever worried about
being offensive.
Anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Seth MacFarlane is clearly wants to poke fun at everyone, but there are probably some things he can't say or do on Fox. Comedy Central has never been like that with Trey and Matt. And so they've just constantly gone after, there's nothing sacred to them. Nothing. They are uncancelable. In today, in the day that we call it, whatever we call cancel culture, they can't be canceled because they have made fun of everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty shocked at how much Seth MacFarlane's been able to get away with on network television because they go pretty far. But yeah. I need to dive into South Park a little bit more and see if I can.
Well, the pandemic special is pretty good. I haven't seen the vaccination one yet, but they just do such an amazing job of skewering everyone. So, mm-hmm. and go back, the early ones will hit you in the right spot now that you're older. You would not have gotten them at 10, but those early season episodes are pretty darn good too. So, this was an impossible task. There's so many shows I love that had to leave off the list. This is good. I feel like we've got a good representative slice here. So we're gonna have to figure out where to go from here. We're out of rankings. We're running out of gimmicks.
Well, if we don't have anything to do next week, we could rank the best middle tier jobs. I don't know. We'll come up with something.
Yeah, we gotta stop. We're not gonna rank jobs. We are actually gonna think and create some content for you next week. This has been low hanging fruit, but I'm glad we did it because it's generated some fun discussions and some fun debates. So this has been a good exercise, and it's something I imagine we'll revisit probably this time next year. So, but we've had fun. You know what we need to do? We need to do a Dear Andy and Ari episode next week. We're going to turn that over to the folks and see what the folks, because that's what that ranking, the job ranking conversation sprung from, was a Dear Andy question I got. So yes, Dear Andy, Dear Ari, next Monday. You know how to find us. Get your questions in. If you're Athletic subscribers, drop them in our mailbag. If you follow us on Twitter, I'm at Andy_Staples. Ari is at Ari Wasserman. You can drop them there too. Best questions we will attempt to answer probably in the stupidest way possible. Thank you for listening.